leaving home, finding your voice, and a young woman taking a walk from an arranged marriage. This is In the Moment, the podcast version. This week was packed with news and music and poetry, but we were all especially taken with blues musician Davy Knowles. You'll hear from him in a moment. Patrick Hicks shares poetry, plus the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet and the first feminist Balkan folk song. It's from the Ottoman Empire. All right, let's turn down the theme music. Ready? Because this is Davy Knowles.
Forgive me, Lord, for what I've done. Shot a man down in Oxford, Mississippi, gonna make another fatherless son. I'm an honest man, I know where I stand. Money's been my downfall. I ain't settled yet. Had to beg, borrow, and steal. If I shine away, if there's a price to pay, never been forced to kill. So forgive me, Lord, for what I've done. Shine a man down.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh, and that is Oxford, Mississippi, from the album 3 Miles from Avalon by Davy Knowles. Born on the Isle of Man, Davy Knowles left home at the age of 19 to find out what a life in music had to offer and maybe what he had to offer in return. Today, he lives in Chicago, but you can see him in Rapid City on March 17th as part of the Black Hills Blues Society's March Madness. That show was at 8 p.m. Mountain at the Alex Johnson Ballroom. Doors open at 7:30. I caught up with Davy Knowles at his home in Chicago and asked him about some of those earliest memories of learning to love music.
Well, you know, there was always music playing in my house. My dad played quite a lot of, you know, guitar to himself, and, you know, at kind of family events, stuff like that. And more than anything, was just a huge music fan. So there was always music playing. He had a great record collection. And between him and my older sister, Holly, I kind of learned a lot about music that perhaps, you know, would have passed me by. And really, I mean, I got into actually performing music after Dad played me Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits. That was absolutely it for me. I just wanted to be Mark Knopfler, really, from that day on. And then, you know, I after we kind of established, him and I, that I was really into this and really wanted to pursue it, he really opened the doors to a lot of other artists, you know, people like Eric Clapton and John Mayall and the Blues Breakers and the British Blues kind of invasion, which, you know, Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac and Rory Gallagher and people like that. So really, I mean, it's kind of entirely his fault that I got into it.
You know, not every father and son connects over something like that. It could have been something that, you know, you lost interest in or even rejected in your adolescence. But
yeah.
It turned into something that, when you're 19, brought you here to the United States. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. March 2007, the band I was in, Backdoor Slam, came over to the States for the South by Southwest Festival in Austin. And things went really, really well. And we stayed out here, you know. I had dreamed about coming to the States to play and listen to music since, you know, I started, since I was 11-ish. And it's where all my heroes came from, or where all my heroes kind of were influenced by American music. So it was a big dream. I quickly kind of realized, yeah, I need to be in the States.
So my daughter is a classical musician. She plays cello. And
one
of the things, she's 15, and one of the things as a parent I sort of see her wrestling with is that in her head it sounds one way. She knows enough about music to say, I know it can sound like this. But technically, I've watched her progress over the years, and she's quite accomplished now. But I remember those struggles. Did you have those struggles with, you know, the guitar too, saying, okay, in my head, I know this is what it is, but I'm just not there yet? Did you hear it?
I might have some, I might have some bad news for your daughter, and it never really goes away.
Oh, that was my next question. Yeah.
I think that's part of the beauty of being a musician is you're constantly striving, you're constantly chasing, and you might get to a certain level where, it's less frustrating, but you still have frustrations and. You certainly still have something that you're chasing, and the goalposts always move. It's not necessarily that same thing the whole time. It's a different thing on a day to day basis, or a month to month, or tour to tour, or what have you basis. But yeah, you're constantly chasing something, definitely.
How have you personally then survived and learned to integrate that chase into your life so it's a healthy thing for you? Or have you not done that yet?
Well, I think once you embrace it and you kind of understand, sometimes instead of chasing perfection, you should be chasing character or a feeling or a vibe, and making sure that is what comes across. And music ultimately is an expression, and it doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be, it just needs to do its job, which is convey the message that you want to do, whether it's, a lyric or a guitar passage or a piece of cello music or interpreting someone else's music. I think once you embrace that as a challenge and accept kind of a warts and all kind of approach, I think that really helps.
Mm. So our music producer, Steve Swemke, introduced me to your work, and I didn't know you before, but Steve did. And so I'm just listening. And one of the things, and I hope this isn't super cheesy to say, but it just, you love it. That was one of the first things. I was like, he loves this. And so I love it too. What do you love so much about, is it the performing? Is it the process? Is it the songwriting? Because I think that just that love comes through immediately the first 30 seconds.
That's such a lovely thing to say. I think more than anything, I was brought up a music fan. Before I was ever a musician, so to speak, I adore listening to music and surrounding myself with music. I think my biggest passion in life is a record collector. I'm getting to the stage where I'm worried about the floors in my apartment, but it's I absolutely adore music full stop, and it doesn't have to be blues. It's a beautiful thing. I've always connected with it, and I feel incredibly grateful and fortunate to call it my profession. It's a really joyous experience for me. It can be a therapeutic one, and it can be a real kind of, jazz you up kind of way as well. I just do genuinely, absolutely adore every aspect of being a musician. I'm pretty rubbish at anything else, if I'm honest. I've got no choice.
So what else would you be doing if you couldn't do this?
I have no idea.
That's probably a good sign, right?
Right, absolutely. I really love writing. I kind of write quite a lot as well, and my sister is a writer, and maybe I would have done something like that, but I really honestly don't know. I feel, again, very fortunate to have kind of stumbled into it.
So let's talk about songwriting a little bit and sort of approaching honesty when you write a song, and then the vulnerability of really performing something that personal for the first time. What's that experience like for you?
I imagine it's like, I don't have any kids, but I imagine that's what it's like, seeing them kind of go off into the big wide world. Because you do put a lot of time, a lot of effort, and, a lot of heart into these things. The songwriting process, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, is honesty. And even if you're writing about a character, you've kind of got to embrace it like an author would, and just totally step into their shoes. And even if it's not something that, you've directly been through, you've got to believe absolutely 100% that the person you're writing about has. And I really like that aspect of it too. Don't expect anyone to enjoy or believe what you do if you don't 100%. And So I really enjoy that kind of storytelling side of songwriting. And then, to go and play that live, it is nerve-wracking. especially, you put out a new album or something, and you desperately want people to like it, and you're never going to please everyone, but you desperately want people to like it, because it's a kind of little bit of a part of you that's kind of being shot out in the world.
Yeah. Do you have conversations with your sister about writing and about the creative process?
We definitely do. Yeah. I mean, we live very far apart. I'm in Chicago and she lives in Malta in the Mediterranean.
Oh, wow.
we got to spread out. But we're on Skype quite often, and we're still very close, as close as you can be with that kind of distance. But yeah, absolutely. We talk about all sorts of stuff like that. And she's a huge music fan too. Mm-hmm. So she'll tell me about a record that I need to get, or, vice versa. It's good.
So is your father still alive?
Yeah, he passed a couple of years ago now.
Mine too. I have my father's records. Do you have some of those records that he left you now?
One of my most treasured possessions is his first record, which was a copy of the Freewheeling Bob Dylan.
Oh, yes.
it's just such a great record, and Don't Think Twice is, I don't think I can listen to that without weeping. But, I do. I've got a couple of records that obviously an old girlfriend of his had written in,
Right.
But wasn't that the lovely thing? You wrote a message to someone and gifted music saying, track number 4 is how I feel, kind of thing. And I love that.
Oh, my dad was into Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson.
Oh,
so
yes.
There were just many of those in my collection now. And then you can kind of watch his personality evolve as the music, as if you sort of put them in order of the year they were released, you can see him change as a person and tell a story of his musical life, too. So what a
absolutely
treasure.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. We'll change the subject now before we both really get going on our dads. I want to talk a little bit more about writing, and this time not about music, because you have a blog, and I was reading one of the entries called Direction with a Little Artistic License. It's from September of 2016, and I absolutely adore this story and how you told it. Do you feel like summarizing that a little bit, or should we just send people to the website?
I can't remember which one it was. It was about being at school, right?
Being at school and making and sort of getting support. And again, you say artistic license, so I don't know how much of that is your story and how much is is sort of, crafted. But tell me a little bit about what you were trying to get at with that piece of writing, which is really quite well done.
No, thank you. I was never particularly good at school. I wouldn't say I was a troublemaker or anything. I just kind of quietly got away with not doing very much. And as soon as guitar became a thing and a, a total obsession, everything else seemed to go out the window. And I grew up on the Isle of Man, which is a very small little island in the British Isles, and very close community. And basically, you couldn't get away with anything. But I had a careers advisor at school who was also a form tutor to me, and is a very dear friend now. Arthur Fife, his name is. And Arthur used to come and watch my band in the pub, because as long as you weren't causing any trouble, you could be in the pubs, at 14, 15. And I kind of started playing there, playing out and about when I was about 13, 14. And it was just a great nurturing environment. And I remember even, getting into school on a Monday morning and my form tutor giving me a merit, like a commendation, saying, well done, that was a really great gig. You promoted the name of the school in a local pub, all of this stuff. And I just felt incredibly well looked after and well nurtured. And at the end of the day, this is a legitimate profession. And why don't you give this a go? Because this is obviously where your passion lies. And a lot of that really fell on Mr. Fife, on Arthur. He was very supportive. And I do remember that part of that blog where it was that parent-teacher meeting, and I was terrified because I knew I'd done terribly in these exams. And just the amazing amount of support I got from both my parents and Mr. Fife. Just, your kid needs to be doing this. This is something that he really should be pursuing. And, we really recommend he does it. And I thought that was such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it didn't have to go that way.
No, and I'm well aware that, you know, a lot of folks have a bit of a struggle to really persuade people, hang on, no, this is a legitimate thing. This isn't, you know, I don't want to be an accountant. I'm not an accountant. I'm a musician. And I know a lot of people don't have that support. I feel very grateful.
Did you know you'd have to leave Isle of Man to really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's just way too small a place. As beautiful and proud I am to be from there, you know, it's a really remarkable part of the world. But it's 28 miles by 12, you know.
Yeah.
I had to leave.
Yeah.
I tried to make a bit of a go of it in England, and it didn't last very long, but probably stood me in good stead, learning how to live away from home and that kind of stuff. Pretty much straight out the bat, I got lucky and came out here.
Hmm. So you've experienced, you know, sorrow and grief and also this incredible love and tenderness and support. Which one of those emotions really informs your music? Do you tap into both of those for different...
Absolutely. Yeah, all life experiences. I mean, they make us what we are and how we see the world and how we see other people, how we interact with other people. And I think all of those things should be put into it as a whole. You know, the blues kind of genre has a poor reputation of being depressing or samey or, you know, woke up this morning kind of stuff. And you know what? There's some beautiful music out there that will rip you apart, you know, and really just tear you apart. But there's also some really funny kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know, good. I think it runs the whole gamut. I think it's a really, really broad genre, and it gives you a lot of room for expression. So.
There was work when we moved down here. Now it's all but disappeared. Burn out cars, blind and fair, down on crumbling road. We were told that there'd be brighter days, hoping us to see the change. Bullet holes, no window panes, down on crumbling road.
Coming from a small place geographically, then, what is touring like for you when you... cross a nation like the United States to get to South Dakota and Rapid City?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just amazingly terrifying on one aspect, but so incredibly romantic on the other. You know, you're kind of out there doing it. You are, a lot of people say, you know, paying your dues and all of that stuff. I haven't felt for a second like it's been a struggle. It's always been a joy. I've always loved being in between places, being on the road with another 8 hours to go. It's, you know, sometimes really exciting. You're out there. You're doing it. This is great. And I've been doing it for 10 years now, nearly. And it's never gotten old.
Yeah.
I adore every aspect.
Let's talk about your latest album, 3 Miles from Avalon. Tell me, were you trying to accomplish anything particular when you set out to record that? Was there a certain sound you were trying to capture or a story you're trying to tell?
Definitely. You know, like I said, I'm a big record collector, and I kind of really lean, you know, towards that 60s, 70s kind of, you know, band sound. And we wanted to record an album that would sit in the collection, you know, sonically and have that. And so we found this great all-analog studio here in Chicago, and we did the whole thing in 3.5 days, all to tape, the old-fashioned way. You know, if you messed up, you do the whole song again. There's no auto-tune or any of that silly stuff. You know, it's honest, and that's what I wanted more than anything.
People recognize that now, don't you think? I mean, that was another thing I just got right. I'm like, I didn't want to hear it on my phone. You know, I'm
right.
That's what I had with me, so that's what I was using. But immediately, like, this feels real, and I need to play it on my record player at home. So I think that comes through right away.
Oh, thank you. You know, what's better than a good record and a big bottle of wine? You know,
right.
I love that.
And then you don't skip ahead either. I mean, I want the whole narrative, you know, from not just from a lyrical standpoint, but just from a musical standpoint. I want it from beginning to end. I want that whole experience.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do anything else except listen.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, leaf through the liner notes and kind of immerse yourself
right.
in it. That's what I love. And, you know, there is a part of me that, you know, is kind of sad that an album like Dark Side of the Moon, where everything runs into the next, right. will never make sense ever again. Right. And that, you know, even the generation, my generation or younger, won't quite get it or have the patience to absorb something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're really missing out. And so, it's, you know, we really wanted to try and get that vibe back. Not so much the, you know, the concept album thing, but, yeah, a work as a whole rather than here's a single, you know. Let's bung that out on iTunes.
and likewise, some of those great musicians, great guitar players, we also sort of walk through saying goodbye to them and people like you come along. Do you have a sense of responsibility or aspiration to say, you know, I see a certain musician dies, but yet there's this new generation of people who are trying that to capture that same authenticity or putting the same effort into their craft, who are on the road driving here and there, who still care about a full album. Do you feel that sense that you're part of something bigger than yourself?
I don't know. I don't know if there's a responsibility. I mean, on a really kind of basic level, I really, you know, I feel complete if a kid is at one of the shows and says that they bought a Rory Gallagher album because of me. That's, you know, job complete. Go, you know, people should be looking backwards as much as possible too, and really kind of realizing, oh, you know, things didn't start at Led Zeppelin, as genius as they were. You know, that there was this whole world of music before that, and I think it's important to promote that as much as possible, and at the same time, you know, pay tribute to all of that stuff that's gone on before, but also try and, you know, put your own stamp on it. I think that's crucial too. I don't know about a sense of responsibility. I don't know if that's my place to to really include myself in that.
Yeah. What will you be playing this time in Rapid City? When you come to South Dakota, what's the experience going to be like for audiences?
Oh, well, I hope it's a good one.
Yeah, well, I have no doubt of that.
You know, I'm just a huge fan of good old-fashioned blues rock, rock and roll. You know, just good musicianship, hopefully, good show, energetic. You know, I love playing acoustic. I've got an old National steel guitar that I bring out. Mm-hmm. So we'll do a little kind of, you know, little acoustic in there too, and just have fun.
Yeah.
More than anything, you know, it's my first time playing in South Dakota. I'm excited.
Excellent. I hope you love it. Tell me a little bit about your guitar. Sure. Where did it come into your life?
Oh,
that,
you know,
that particular one, yeah.
That particular one is from 1932, and I bought it on my very first tour of the United States back in 2007 from an amazing guitar shop in Nashville, which I now believe is a cowboy hat and boot shop. It's kind of moved away somewhere else, which is kind of sad, but it's an amazing instrument, and I really love playing it. You know, again, it's part of the blues thing is, you know, it didn't start at Muddy Waters and the electric blues and all this stuff. There was a whole world of Delta blues, country blues before that that's really fun to try and tap into too.
Davey Knowles, I hope that you love South Dakota, and I hope that the audiences treat you very, very well, and I really, really appreciate your time. I've taken a lot of it. I hope that's okay.
Oh, no, it's been an absolute pleasure, and very much looking forward to playing.
All right, thanks. Journey well.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye.
Sleepless nights. You'll find out it's not all as it seems. You're constantly pulling. Davy Knowles comes to Rapid City on March 17th as part of the Black Hills Blues Society's March Madness. The show is at 8 p.m. Mountain at the Alex Johnson Ballroom. Doors open at 7:30. We'll take a break. Stay in the moment. SDPB Radio. Let's have some poetry. This is Patrick Hicks.
The inventor of the car bomb. It goes like this. Pack Semtex around a fuse, latch the trunk shut carefully, then park beside a soft target. This is the hardest part, which is made easier over time. The last step is to stroll away, hands in your pockets. Glass and rubble will hail down onto a spray of blood and ribcage. The plumage of oil smoke will geyser up from torn metal. Burning tires, those hellfire halos, will flame around the ripped carcass of a Ford. Then, silence, as the ambulance winds awake. Someone was the first to do this, and now, every day, they pop all over the world. They detonate inside my television. The car bomb was perfected in Northern Ireland, and I know the man who nightmared it up. He showed the world how it could be made into a virus, an epidemic of explosions, a daily shattering. Tall and lean, he's a peace activist now. In Derry, he holds his Guinness to mine, Sláinte, and we drink it in. We lick our lips and talk about how peace, quiet peace, has finally found Northern Ireland. We leave the pub waltzing on booze, and he points us down a moon-slick street. There is an empty van beside us. He tells me exactly how much Semtex can be packed into the back. We move away. Our feet click off the concrete like a timer.
Patrick Hicks reading his poem, The Inventor of the Car Bomb. The Minneapolis Guitar Quartet folded themselves into our tiny studio. It was crowded and hot and glorious. Here is Maya Radovanlia.
So I'm the arranger. This is very old Macedonian song, traditional Macedonian folk song that I learned a long time ago, and I liked it, and so I thought it might be fun to have it for a guitar quartet. Originally it's for a voice, so usually female singer, and traditional ensemble. It is very interesting song because it's from Ottoman Empire times, so maybe 14th, 15th century. Very old, and I often joke in concerts, I say, this is the first feminist Balkan song. because it talks about this young woman that refused to marry Turkish ruler of that area. So
Wow. All right.
She kind of stood up. The name of the song is Prošeta se Jovka Kumanovka, which means Jovka from Kumanovo took a walk. Thank you.
the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet, Maya Radovanlia, Joe Hagedorn, Benjamin Kunkel, and Wade Oden. You can hear full episodes of In the Moment weekdays. The podcast version is released on Fridays. From all of us at South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.